The following is a conversation with Phoenix Muir, a current freshman basketballer at Kaiser University. Phoenix started his sporting career as a swimmer at City of Derby Swimming Club before changing sport and becoming a basketballer at Derby Trailblazers. Phoenix then decided to go to university in the US and now plays basketball at Kaiser University. It's clear through the conversation that Phoenix has had many setbacks, including losing part of his little finger in a freak gym accident. But this hasn't stopped Phoenix to excel and become better in his basketball game with an exciting career ahead of him. If you enjoy this conversation, then please drop us a like and subscribe to the podcast. We hope you enjoy the conversation. Right, so Phoenix, tell us what comes to mind when you think of basketball?
I'd say probably just like a lot of, I think it's just probably passion for me. It's just like, it's what I've known for so long. It's like, I put so much work in towards basketball, probably just passion. Like, it's my biggest passion. I love the game so much. So, yeah,
When
probably
you say
passion.
passion, like what do you mean by that? Your passion on the court, in training, matches?
I think it comes with everything in game as well. It's important, but in terms of passion, it's like, day in, day out, you've got to be doing something you're passionate about. So for me, that's basketball. So I'd say passion. So that's what drives me forward. So,
Okay. So, because we've talked about like Kobe Bryant on the podcast before, and obviously his training routine was just crazy. Can you tell us a bit about kind of what your current training routine is, where you're at, who you play basketball for, just to tell the viewers, give them a bit of context?
So yeah, I joined Kaiser University of last year, so I've done one season, which is Kaiser is in West Palm. It's an NAIA school, which is NAIA Division One, which is basically Division Two level. So it's a good standard, but it's not Division One, but it's still a good standard. So I joined there last year. I'm studying sport management as well. That's my major. That's what I'm majoring in.
Yeah, so tell us a bit about the current training, like routine, what it seems like, because obviously you've gone there for a reason, right? The basketball's so good. So tell us like why is that? The kind of coaches you have, the facilities and the training program, it must be, I'm guessing, much better than what you can tend to get in the UK.
Yeah, I think that's what I noticed as soon as I got over there. Like, you get access to the court whenever you want, access to the gym whenever you want. Like, they have all the shooting gun machines, where you shoot it and the ball pops back out to you. It's just so much better for my development than being stuck in England. I think that's why I made the jump, because even if I stayed in the UK, the standard wouldn't be much. It wouldn't be as much of a leap for me as when I if I'd have gone to America. So I'd rather not be, a great player over here. I'd rather be a bad player over there and then work my way up. Because that's
Yeah.
what my coach over here, my coach Matt Shaw, said to me, who's my coach at Derby. He said, "You're a good player over here, but you're a below average player in America." And that's just what it is. So for me, in terms of training, in the season, we will probably every day, we train in every day on the court. We have practice every day pretty much. And then we'll also have strength and conditioning 3 times a week, normally Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then maybe, if you want to lift on the weekends, you can. But yeah, practices, normally very high intensity practices, like very a lot of running, it's fast. But before each game, it'll be like just a slow practice, just running through everything. And after the game, it'll just be like a shoot around, no contact. So yeah, but what, and there's like a lot of different coaches. I know you asked about coaches as well. So obviously you have the head coach, and then I think three assistant coaches, but they're all kind of different sort of roles. So one will be just kind of, in charge of, taking stats or doing scout reports, and then one of them might just kind of be by the coach's side, on that like strategic side, and the other one might just be kind of taking care of the athletes, like in terms of school, because that's really important. You have to keep a certain GPA to be able to play. So that's what I learned that the hard way, because my GPA was falling a little bit. And yeah, coach talked to me about it and said, you need to get that up.
Yeah, so if I remember correctly, did you swim at City of Derby for a little bit, or were you not swimming at all?
No, I swam from a young age, and to be honest, I did hate swimming. But I stopped a year when I got to year seven. Well, when I was in year six, I told my mum, I'm done. I don't want to do it again. Like after the season, I said, I'm done. I just want to focus on basketball. I think I was like, I'm done. I don't want to do it anymore. And she's like, no, you're giving it another year. And I even how many times I said to her, I'm done. She said, no, you're giving it another year. And I gave it another year. And I was like, honestly, I'm done. And I had to get my dad to try and help me out, to try and convince her that I don't want to swim anymore.
Well, swimming's almost one of those ones where the longer you stay in it, almost the better, the more skills you're going to build up. How do you think swimming, starting off in swimming, kind of gave you a backbone of skills to then take into another sport like basketball? Do you think it gave you a baseline of fitness, something
Yeah.
you could take in, you know?
I think swimming did give me like certain attributes physically, maybe. I think I got broader shoulders, which helps you in basketball a lot, and I kind of developed a lot from swimming from a young age, which is good. But I think not as much physically, but more mentally for me. Swimming's quite a large bad schedule in it, really, to be fair. It's probably you're doing it every day, early mornings and like late nights on a Wednesday. But I think it kind of just gave me motivation, because in sport, I think that kind of gave me that mindset of just wanting to win, like just the passion to just want you want to I want to win. I don't want to lose. I just want to win. So definitely gave me that kind of competitive side. I think swimming definitely gave me a competitive edge, which is important for me.
I do actually find it really interesting because I remember I saw you like a few years ago and you weren't that big. And then I saw you again kind of recently and you're just massive. Right. So I'm assuming you had quite a late massive growth spurt. Did you notice that had like a big impact on your basketball?
It's interesting actually, because when I had a big growth spurt over COVID and lockdown, that kind of 2 year period where no school, so I was just with chilling with Joel basically every day, just messing around in the house. And no school, so I was just on Zoom calls for school like for a year or so. And then when we actually went back to school, everyone was like, oh my gosh, you've grown. Like, I think I went from like 5'10 to like 6'4, I think. And I just like had that massive growth spurt. And then that was probably my first like kind of big growth spurt where I realized I'm probably going to be pretty big. And then I grew again from 6'4 to 6'7, I think last year, which again helped me. But I think over COVID, I kind of, when I went back to basketball, it was kind of like, okay, I think I could probably, if I worked hard enough, I could probably be something or try and move my way up. But before that, I kind of just played basketball for fun. I didn't really take it that serious, but when I had that growth spurt, I was like, yeah, I think I can probably make something if I work really hard. So it took
Yeah,
3 years,
that's good.
but
Where do you?
yeah, because I remember the difference was crazy. Like, because I remember turning up to your house, giving you a little tutoring session, and I'd cook you in a 1v1. Do you remember that? Just make sure
Yeah,
you remember that for when you get big, because that's gonna be, I'm going to be bringing that up. But
I don't think that would
yeah,
happen now, but
because no, we can play next time. We can play next time you're home. And, yeah. When we're both in Derby, I'll cook you again. It's fine.
I'll put £100 and he doesn't score.
Right, you heard it here, Joel. Yeah,
I've heard it.
£100.
The viewers have heard it as well. Yeah,
£100.
we'll do that.
He will not score.
We'll make a video of us 1v1ing, and I'll bet you. Right, no, because I remember I did do a few sessions with Derby Trailblazers when I was younger, because I was basically just getting bored with swimming. And one thing I have like tattooed in my brain is, I don't know if they made you do the same thing, is where you're like up against the wall with your hands up and you're just jumping there for ages. And it was like so hard. Is that something you did as well?
I had to do a lot of stuff like that to get the fast twitch. Mm-hmm. The fast twitch fiber is really important for basketball. So I think that's what my coach back in Derby said to me a couple of years ago. Because I was like, I've had a big growth spurt, and I had a talk with him about, you know, what I needed to do to improve it. It's like, you have the size and everything, you just need to be quicker. You just get quicker and you'll be a really good player. So I did a lot of stuff like that, just, you know, fast twitch stuff, trying to get as explosive as possible, really. Yeah.
And obviously you're 6'6" now or something along those lines?
Six seven.
So what, as being 6'7", where does that put you kind of in the squad height wise? Because obviously you play center, is that right?
I play like stretch four, like power forward. I don't really play center. I'll say this before. I used to play center, but I kind of developed and I kind of got a good shot. Like I developed my 3-point shot and started to be able to. I had kind of adapted my game a little bit, expanded my game, which is always good because that's how the basketball's moving. You see it in the NBA, like 7-footers pulling up from three. Like, so you get five different positions: point guard, shooting guard, small forward, power forward, and center. So a point guard is kind of like the captain of the ship, really. So he's like the one, you know, like Steph Curry, for example, Kyrie Irving. You know, it's normally smaller. They can handle the ball really well, mainly passing the ball, just distributing the ball. And they're normally the leaders, basically. And the shooting guard, they're, clues in the name, they should really be able to shoot the ball, like, really well. So they're your two guards. The shooting guard also should kind of be a point guard a little bit as well. But a small forward, that's normally, like, your athletic players, like, scorers mainly. Like, a lot of, like, LeBron James, great scorers are normally small forwards. Power forward, where I play. Yeah, setting screens, being able to play in the post is really important. Using your body is really important. And then centers, like, your big power forward and centers normally get rebounds, block shots, score inside. But it's like almost every player in every position could do it all. Like, that's just how it is. Like, even centers are, you know, playing like point guards now. So, you know, yeah, it's weird how
the game evolves. Shaquille O'Neal, he must have been a center, right?
Yeah.
He's class. Go on.
No, I'm just laughing at you, mate. Yeah, he was class.
So, you mentioned a bit about the keeping your GPA up, staying on the side. Can you tell us a bit about how it is in America, balancing the academics as well as being in one of the top squads for the basketball? You're in your freshman year, to give the viewers some context. You moved out there, what, in October, September time last year? You've had to get your way into the squad, and obviously it's quite rare for a freshman to be in the first team, for say. And you've had a chance to train a bit from what you've told me with the first team. So how's that been, just balancing that whole thing? And where do you think it's, obviously you've got 3 years left, that's a long time to progress and get better. And in this first year, you already seem to have progressed massively from what you were at Derby Trailblazers. So just tell us a bit about how you balance that, academics and basketball.
Yeah. For me, it's kind of hard for me to balance the academics and the athletics, because if I'm being honest, I wouldn't be in America if I wasn't playing basketball. But at the same time, it's kind of like you have to, you know, have good academics. Otherwise, you won't play, or you could lose scholarships or whatever. So I've got to keep my academics high. So, and even if it's fallen, normally the coaches can help you out and get you tutors. And we have a study hall. I don't know if you guys know what that is, but it's like everyone that's on the team that's like struggling with a certain like class or whatever, at like 7 p.m. go to the room and then get tutors in and like get help and do your work. It's kind of just to make sure that everyone's like getting good GPA, because it's important. Yeah, because it looks good on the school if the basketball program has a really high GPA. Like, you know,
yeah,
it's good.
Yeah, yeah.
So balancing it, like balancing the athletics and the academics is hard for me sometimes, because especially if you have a really hard session, you've had a long day, it's like I'd rather just like play 2K and just chill or something, go to the beach, but you just have to push through it and do some work, I guess. But yeah,
that sounds so good. So are you on the beach at your uni?
Yeah, basically it's like a 5-10 minute drive. It's a nice beach.
So good. So is it like, obviously we've all seen the, you know, the American basketball movies, like Coach Carter and all of this, and all of these like American basketball movies. Is the culture and kind of like training and things like that similar to those movies, or
the training is a lot more like cutthroat in a way? So if you're not, it's like if you're not doing your job, like you're not doing what you should be doing on the court, or you're underperforming, no one's gonna feel sorry for you, or you know, or like console you or anything. And you're not gonna play either. If you're not playing well, you're not training, you're not gonna play. That's just how it is. So yeah. And then intensity-wise, very intense. Like, I've had a lot of sessions. I remember my first ever session with the coaches. There was a lot of freshmen, so people were all new to the program, and we were doing a drill. The first drill we were doing, coaches talking through the drill. And we started, obviously, he talked us through the drill, and he said, we're going to run a suicide. A suicide is basically a shuttle run. So you go free throw line back, halfway line back, opposite free throw line back, and then end line back. And it's quite tough. Good conditioning, but it's tough. And he said, we're going to run a suicide for every time someone messes up this drill. So they have a guy, they'll have someone that will be on the side of the court with the clock, and it will be up on the scoreboard. And you can see, and it will like, coach will set, tell him to put one in each time you make a mistake. So the first session, like, I think there was 40 mistakes, something like that. And then, so we run like 20 of them, and everyone's just dead. So after we ran 20, a guy comes in late to practice because he had class. And he says, if I make this free throw, then... It said double or nothing. If I make this free throw, we're done. But if I miss it, we'll do 40. Steps up and just bricks the shot. And then coach, and everyone thought coach was going to just like say, nah, oh, we're all right. Nah, he just goes and tells the guy, I put another 20 on. And then we just ran like hell. Yeah. It's a lot of stuff like that, really. Just mentally, just like tough.
I wanted to ask, because obviously we've seen that Moneyball. And like what Jonah Hill's role was in that, like kind of analytics and that side of things. And from what you've told me, it's so secretive, like the whole training thing. Like the gym is like locked, no one's allowed in the gym when you're in there, there's no recording. And you've also talked about the percentages of you shots made, taken, that's all analyzed for the coaches. Yeah. So there's not really any hiding. So can you tell us a little bit about that and like the aura potentially behind the coach, like how the coaches kind of feel behind him? And because I believe the head coach is like, it's Marcus Bryant, right? The main coach of the whole program.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
at Kaiser.
We call him chief because it's like tribe. So we call him chief, but yeah. So talking about practicing, like, There's not really any hiding from having a bad practice, because after the practice, the coach is going to go and watch back the recording and, you know, get all your analyze it and get all your percentages, and you're going to see it, and he'll might even put it in the group chat and you can look at it. And if there's guys that are ahead of you, like doing better than you or doing worse than you, you know, you've got to just be consistent and keep trying to be better each day of practice. Just try and be consistent. But also don't pressure to add just for me. I was putting a bit too much pressure on myself, especially because I just thought, because the coach has so much power, you know, coaches have so much power, especially in team sports, you know, they don't have to play. They're not, it's not their problem, you know? So I was putting a lot of pressure on myself to perform. And I feel like that's when I played worse. When I just kind of relaxed, I was playing a lot better and having better practices.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's something that I always find interesting about kind of team sports is, for example, when Joel and I did swimming, it's so obvious. You're either fastest or not. And if you're fastest, you get picked for the team. If you're not, you don't go. It's that simple. Whereas in things like basketball, I guess it's so subjective with the coaches. The coaches could think, this guy's really good, or he's really good when he plays with a certain person or in a certain situation. So I guess from that point of view, it's difficult and easy because they can always come up with a justification to have somebody in a team. But then at the same time, there's nothing, I guess there are some stats, but then it's not as objective as this person's the fastest or this person's the strongest, is it?
Yeah, no. And I think if I was a coach, I would put guys on the court that are consistent and that get the job done. You know, you want to stick with what you know as a coach. You know, especially for me coming in as a freshman, like, you're not gonna put someone in that you don't trust. You want to have someone in that you're gonna trust. So you're gonna want someone that's experienced and played in the program for a while, which is understandable. It's what I would do. So, yeah.
Yeah, so on that like kind of team selection, how does that actually work in Kaiser? Because you've obviously got the first team, I don't know if that's what you call it, the first team, and you've got their selection process, potentially more of a consistent side put out in the first team. And then you've got like the second team, which you are playing most of your games in, which I'm guessing is more of a kind of, they're testing different people, giving people different game time to see who can progress onto the first team. So how have you found that selection process at Kaiser?
I mean, good for me. I thought I had a good season in the second team. You know, I started every game, was playing like 30, basically playing 30, 40 minutes, which is good. Selection is kind of like, they want to see everything, you know. They want to see how you are mentally, if you're going to be a good... It's like important as well. If you're going to come into that team, are you going to be a good fit with all the other guys? Are you going to gel in with the guys? It's not all just about, oh, this guy's performing really well on the court. It's off the court that matters as well. And your GPA, you want to have a good GPA, because if you don't have a good GPA, it's going to look bad on that team. It's going to bring the team's GPA down. So I think, yeah... The selection is tough. You got to work hard. And even when you get up, even if you go up, you've got to work even harder to then play. You got to work harder and beat guys that are 23, 24, 25, some of them. You got to beat those guys that have been playing for like 5 years more than I have. You got to beat those guys and work harder than them every day to progress. So... Yeah, it's a lot of development, I think, to get to that point.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, especially coming from the UK, I assume you're playing against people that have done... It's like football here, where they've played basketball from when they were born all the way up to 23, 24, where the culture is just completely different. Like, I'm assuming they'll go down to the park and play basketball, where most of the time, when you're younger in the UK, you go down and play a bit of footy. So...
Yeah.
I think there's obviously, to a certain extent, I'd assume you'd have to work harder because you don't have the years and years of background that they do. But then again, it's good to have that challenge. And then being amongst them, it forces you to come up with them.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. I think my motto has always been, I want to play with people that are just better than me, because that's how you get better. That's how you play better. That's how you get better. If you play with guys that are a lot better than you, then you're going to develop a lot more than you would by playing with guys that are worse than you.
That's really interesting. And I guess that pushing for that play with better people, becomes all those things we talked about, and that getting your GPA up, the dedication, the persistence. Yeah. I have a question for you, and it's obviously you're a student athlete, you're a freshman. Can you, if you were to give one bit of advice to a freshman that's going in, going to play sport, or potentially from the UK going to the US, which happens a lot, what would you say to them? What would be your advice to kind of push through and become the best that they can?
It's not going to be easy as you think it is. It's never as easy. A lot of coaches will tell lies. I mean, I wasn't told any lies, but a lot of coaches will tell lies and tell you this and that. This is going to, you're going to get this, you're going to get that. It's normally not true, but it's going to be hard, but you got to push through it. And, you know, I also would say be the first one in the gym and the last one out of the gym, because that's really important. Outwork everyone, because it's worth it in the end. It will be worth it. But work hard, and also for them to understand that the guys that are already in, that have been in the team, are probably a lot more older than you. So don't put pressure on yourself to think you're going to be better than them when you get there. Just work hard. And because they've had to go through the same thing you have gone through. So just keep working hard and push through. But also, like, just love playing basketball. Like, a lot of people go to college and they just end up hating the game. Like, you've got to still have that love for playing basketball. Otherwise, there's no point playing it, really. If you don't love the game, then there's no point playing.
Yeah, that's interesting, because Shay and I kind of had this discussion about swimming, and when we changed from swimming at kind of the A levels, that 18 to 20 kind of year old, and then we went into rowing, because we kind of lost our drive, for swimming, and that we wanted to try something new, and kind of relight that spark of motivation, everything on that side of things. So do you think going into America and playing basketball over there, obviously you're in Derby Trailblazers in the UK, kind of increase your motivation, relit a spark within you, or do you think you're already at kind of a high at that point going into America?
I mean, I think I always had that spark when I went to the academy at Derby Trailblazers, because the first year I wasn't even on the first team for an academy team in England. I was on the second team and I was pretty bad. I wasn't great. The second year it was the same thing again. I remember actually a good story. So after my first year, we went on like a tour in Belgium for 2 weeks, and I kind of formed a relationship with all the guys on the first team. Like, we all kind of became friends, had a big group. And then I was kind of hoping that I would be put in the first team so I could be with all the guys and, you know, have that experience. But I remember they were reading out the teams I was in the second team, and I was just mortified that I didn't get put in the first team. I was like, that was a really, really like down point in my career, I think, when I got put in that second team for my second year. But it also, I think for a little bit of time there, the like first month of that season, I was like, found it hard to keep going at that point, to keep wanting to go and train and play basketball. But I kind of pushed through it, which helped. And then obviously in my third year, my last year at the academy, I had a really good season, and I talked with the coach, and he was like, I think you have a chance to play in the States, because he also played in the States, and he knows, like, if players would have the, you know, what's needed to play over there. So he told me, you know, you should go for it, and he helped me out with that whole process of recruitment and stuff, which is really good. I've always had that spark from probably when I started out in the academy. Just because even then I was trying to work harder than everyone else and get myself up there. Like, I was never gifted talent-wise. I had to work to get the talent. I wasn't like some of the guys that are just gifted with it. No, I had to, you know, get that skill and work at my craft to be able to get it. Yeah.
You touched on some of your coaches there. Who would you say are your big role models in making it to where you are and making it even further, you know?
Well, it's like when you think about it, in terms of like people that have influenced you, not everyone is like, I've had coaches at I'm not going to name names or anything, but one coach who I don't think particularly liked me for some reason. And yeah, I think I can't remember exactly what he said to me, but I asked him, what have I got to do to, you know, start playing more? This was like a while ago, though. This was a long time ago. And it was like, oh, you know, you're too big, too heavy. You can't shoot. And he was just like, kind of just like, you know, dissing me and dissing my game. I was like, okay, fine. But it kind of motivated me. I remember after that point, when I was going out on runs, I was just like playing back what he said to me. And I think that's a good influence for me. Someone doubting me just spurs me on. It just, I don't know what it is. If someone doubts me, I just have to prove them wrong. Because even friends, like I've said to them, some of my friends have said, oh, I want to go, when I wanted to go out there, that I want to go to America. And it was like, oh, but you sure you want to do that? It's going to be really hard. And there's going to be guys that have played since they were young and it's in America. And I was like, you just kind of doubting me. Like, I don't care about that. I don't care if they've been playing for 20 more years than me. I'm still going to work hard and give it everything. So,
yeah. I'm surprised you didn't say I influenced you, because the way I was like smoking you at your house as well was not right. I definitely did, mate. It wasn't. I think it must have been, you know, sometimes when people have like traumatic experiences and it just wipes from the memory. I think that's what's happened with you, because it wasn't good for you. But yeah, I think that's a good attitude as well, because Joel and I are big believers in, even if, like, the main enjoyment that I've had from sport is when I was working really hard. It's not even the final result or where you end up. It's that kind of process of working really hard all the time and forcing your way through. Do you think that's something you're taking when you're training and trying to progress? Do you feel like you're trying to make the most of every day, or do you kind of have like an end goal in mind?
I have an end goal in mind, and that's to like play professional basketball at one point, but have little goals as well. So I might say, well, I think goal setting's been really important for me. I think set small goals, like improve my shot percentage by this amount, you know, and I'll do that each game. I'll journal. I think that's really important for me. I'll journal before each game, write down notes about what I want to achieve, like who the other team, I want to know about the other team, who I'm going to be guarding, and stuff like that. So, yeah, that's important for me. I'll set goals for the game, and it kind of helps me to achieve goals, like just to play better, if I kind of have a little individual plan for the game. So setting small goals helps me, you know, achieve long goals.
Those goals are good as well, because it's not as vague as just saying, oh, I want to improve my jump shot or I want to improve my passing. You've actually got tangible percentages that you want to improve. So I guess it's a lot easier for you to track how much improvement you're having when you've got a certain percentage or a certain, say you want to reduce turnovers or whatever, you've got a tangible number you can try to beat, rather than just saying something subjective like, oh, I want to improve my jump shot.
Yeah, that's what a lot of people do. Some people set goals and it's too vague. You've got to set the end goal and then set daily, weekly goals.
Yeah.
Start the, you know,
I agree.
Try and achieve what you can each day. Just give 100% day in, day out, really.
Yeah.
You know, that's my motivation.
Yeah.
You talked about some of your kind of setbacks and some stuff that people have said to you along the way that's fueled you. You've got to tell the viewers about the major setback you had a few years ago that is made, it's not impacted your game, or you can tell us about this, but tell the viewers, start to finish, what happened in that gym on that day.
I believe it was January, middle of January, three years ago, my first year at the academy. I was doing a leg workout I went up to the gym, started working out. I was squatting on the squat rack. Just did my warm up set, then put, I think it was my like 100 key on the bar. And that was normally, I'd probably repping that for like 6 to 8, I think, at that point. So it wasn't like it was a ROM rep max. But yeah, so I squatted down, and then I kind of, as I went down, I kind of just lost my footing a little bit somehow. Like, kind of tweaked my ankle in a little bit. Some, I don't know how, it all happened so fast. And then I fell backwards with the bar like this. I fell back. And then as I came back, I kind of rolled over like that. And then my hand landed on the, you know, the metal bars that like stop the
safety rat
smacking on the floor. The safety rat. And basically my finger landed on the safety rack. And then the bar just came down like a guillotine and just squashed it off. And then it was weird because it didn't come fully off. It was just hanging off. Hanging on by like a tiny little bit of skin. So I lifted, I think it landed on it, and then I pushed it off. I didn't realize what had happened. I just thought, oh, I probably bruised my finger. And then I've just gone up, and like, it was like, didn't look real. And it was like squirting out blood, and it was just pouring blood out. And then, yeah, so right there, the tip of my finger went completely. It's like a stub. And then that was insane. Yeah. And then I was with Kai. I think it was Kai at that point in the gym. There was other people in the gym as well. And I'm just coming out of squat rack like, oh my God, my finger. And everyone's like, whoa. And then people are like screaming. And then I sat on the chair, wrapped it up in kitchen roll and like kept it above my heart to stop it like squirting out. And then I called the ambulance and they were like, oh. They were like, oh, what's the emergency and stuff. And then I was like, oh, I've cut my finger off, like the end of my finger off, and it's bleeding everywhere. And I've passed out once. And I'm like really queer, like it's bad. I needed to go to hospital, and there was no way I could have got to hospital without an ambulance right at that point. And then it was like, oh yeah, we'll be 2 hours. I was like, 2 hours? I'm not waiting 2 hours. So yeah, called my dad up and I had to tell him. And I was like, yeah, my fingers, like oh, my end of my fingers come off in the gym. And then he had to take me to hospital. And they reattached it together so it was back to normal. I thought, oh, I'm going to be fine. Gave me some codeine. And then just waited about 2 weeks. Went back to the hospital. And I was expecting them to take the wrap off and it'll be like, oh, it's fine. Doesn't look any different. Took it off and the whole end of my finger was completely black. It looked like a burnt chip. It was like crumbly and black. It was disgusting. She took it off and she was like, yeah, that's they said it would heal, it could heal. Mm. I was like, we're going to have to wait for a couple more, 3 or 4 months to see if it will heal. And I keep going back every couple of weeks. Now it's still the same. And then on the last one, after like 3 months, the doctor was like, here's your options. Like, you can either wait another year and a year or so, and it will be fine. It will heal. Or you can take it off in surgery, or you can get plastic surgery done on it and get plastic in the end of the finger. And I was like, I don't want that. So I was like, I'd already had enough of the whole thing. So I just told him, just take it off.
Yeah, just get rid of it.
Have you seen that Tom Hardy video where it's like the boy that died in the floods? And it's I think it's like someone, it's a guy that's just like, you know what I would have said if my foot was stuck in that grate and the water kept rising and rising and rising, I would have told him to cut it off.
Yeah,
I would have said cut it off, and that's what you did.
Yeah, and I was like, yeah, just cut it off. Honestly, I'm sick of it. And then went to surgery. That was such a weird experience for me. So that surgery got, yeah, because I was lying down on the bed and my arm was out to my side like that under like a platform, and they had a sheet up of so I couldn't see what they were doing. But then they had this like metal light shining on it, and it was like a mirror, so I could basically see through the mirror. So I was just watching them do it, and it was actually cool. to see him, like, how they do it. It was actually sick.
So has that impacted your basketball at all?
No, I don't think it has. But I'd never told, when I was looking at, like, getting recruited to go out to the States, I never told any of the coaches about it. Because I feel like if they, oh, this could be a problem if he's got this finger. So I just didn't. And to be fair, the coaches only knew that I didn't have the end of my finger until a week after the season, which was like two months ago. Okay. Two, 3 months ago. So I'm good at hiding it. So no one really sees it until I show them.
Wait, so how old were you when that happened?
I was 16.
Right, so you were like 16 and repping 100 kg squats for like reps.
Six, yeah.
Yeah, fair play. Because Joel, I mean, you probably remember when I was in that Repton gym doing squats, it wasn't pretty.
Really?
But
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You have way more strength for basketball than you do for swimming, don't you?
Yeah.
And squats are just not at all people's exercise, is it? You've got a long way to go down, a long way to come back up.
Yeah. Nothing is, though. When you, even when you're benching, you've got to go up further than the short person. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Phoenix, Shay and I always kind of conclude on a podcast with what is your hardest session. So, we want to know your hardest session so we can potentially have a go at it and see how it goes. So,
okay.
What is your hardest session you've ever experienced in any sport, anywhere?
In my first season at Kaiser. Like the first semester, so it would have been like October, November time, I think. We had the day before the session, we had a team meeting where we were going to look at like our last game and analyze it together. And the coach hadn't came in yet, but his laptop was open on the table. So Carson thought it'd be funny to go on his laptop that was connected to the projector in front of everyone. And get up an old photo of him when he was in like high school, and it was a funny photo, to be fair. And he put it up on the screen. So when coach came in and he was like, "Oh, who did that? Who put it on the screen?" And Carson said, "Oh yeah, I did. I'm sorry. I thought it'd be funny." And I was like, "Okay, you think it's funny? Then we'll see how much you guys are going to be laughing in training tomorrow." And when a coach says something like that, you're like, you know you're in for it.
You're getting put through the ringer tomorrow.
We had a normal practice for 2 hours before this. And then after that, we stayed. He said in the group chat that day, make sure everyone brings the running shoes as a joke for today. And people, he kind of was joking around about it a little bit. Kind of like, joking around, making people think that it wasn't going to happen or we were going to be running or we weren't. Just kind of playing that mental game. And I can't even, like... When we started running, we did, I think it's called an Indian. The first run we did was the Indian run, which is where you go around the basketball court. And there's about 15 people, so you're all in a line. You go around the basketball court in a circle. You keep running around. And when the coach blows his whistle, the person from the back of the line has to sprint to the front of the line. And if anyone touched the blue of the on the outside of the court or the corners or touched the court with their foot, start over again. And we did that. I think we did that for about an hour to start. It was gruesome. That was just the start as well. And then after that, I think it was five rounds of 17s, where 17 is from one side of the basketball court to the other, not long ways, but width ways, like across. Seven, you touch 1, 2, 3, 4, go 17, and you have to do it in a minute and five. If you don't do it in a minute five, you do that round again. You have to do it in a minute 10. And if you miss that, it's a minute 15 and a minute 20. So if you don't make the time, that round doesn't count. You have to do that round again and you have to complete five rounds.
Right.
So, yeah. And then...
It sounds intense.
And that was this. And this is the last thing we did. We start at the end of the court on the end line. And then you sprint one. And you have to do that in 5 seconds. If you don't do it, you do it again. Sprint it to the end of the court in 5 seconds. Then once you've done one, once you've got everyone's completed one, you then do up and back in 10 seconds. You have to do that. If you don't make it, then you do it again. And you do three, one, two, three, in 15 seconds. You got to do that in 15. 16 seconds. And then five, so one, two, three, four, five. I believe that was 30 seconds. And then seven. And I think, I'm pretty sure the seven was in 40 seconds. And then as soon as you've done seven, you do seven again, then five, then three, then two, then one. So it goes one, two, three, five, seven, seven, five, three, two, one. I just lied on the floor of the dorm room, lied on the floor with two ice packs on my knees and a cold flannel on my forehead. I just laid there. I didn't do anything, but I was just so done.
That sounds brutal. Because you must run, like, doing that, you must run at least, like, a half marathon doing that, including the session beforehand. It must be at least 20, 25, 30K of running, including sprints and turns and stuff like that. It's mental.
And when coach is like, while you're running, the coach is like laughing and saying, oh, he's like forcing everyone to laugh when you're running. He's like, everyone start laughing because it's funny. And like doing stuff like that, like forcing people to laugh and like just making fun of everyone. It was
so support. It's a bit of a mental game as well.
I think when you do stuff like that, I always tell myself, your legs will keep going, but your brain is the thing that will tell your legs to start moving. You just got to keep your legs from under you. Just keep running.
You can't stop. It's interesting because Cos said he did like a really similar session to that.
Yeah.
Didn't he? Where he said he did something like, did he say 2200s and then two water polo games back to back? And it seems like quite a common thing in team sports where the coaches are trying to kind of ascertain which athletes are kind of have the grit to get through the harder sessions.
People don't understand that's what it is. If you quit, then in a coach's mind, it's that, when things get tough in a game, you're going to quit on the team. So you just have to keep, even if you're throwing up or whatever, you just got to keep going.
You just got to keep going
because it's the mental thing. The coach wants to see if you've got that determination, which is important.
Great conversation, Phoenix. It was great to get to know your journey, what makes you tick. And the influence that certain people have had on your sporting career at the moment. And it's exciting where there's the potential to go globally in the future. But for the viewers, you're listening to the Sports Influence podcast. And please drop subscribe, drop a like. And we'll hope to see you in the future where we have more guests on to talk about their influence on sport. Thank you for listening to that conversation with Phoenix Muir. It is clear that Phoenix has had an exciting sporting journey fueled by his internal motivations and strong mental capacity. We are very excited to see how Phoenix's sporting journey will progress into the future, hopefully with him becoming a professional basketball player. Please leave us a like and subscribe to the podcast for future content like this.